This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from Tantalk Radio Network studio in glorious Clearwater, Florida. The perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. This half hour is brought to you by Larson & Larson. They are intellectual property specialists, so whether you have written a book or a movie script, or even come out with a great idea for a patent, Larson & Larson can help protect you. Your work is valuable, so make sure that you protect it. For a free consultation, call 727-546-0660. They are my lawyers, and they should be yours. Well, I have a wonderful guest today. It's really exciting. Maya Rodale. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Hi, Maya, are you there?
Hi, I'm here, and you're pronouncing it correctly.
Okay. Well, it is so great to have you on. You know, I just love your new book, and I just, you know, Lady Bridget's Diary is really great. Let's talk about you're involved in so many things, and I know that I want to talk to you a little bit about all of the things you do in the romance field, because you are a perfect romance writer. And we just finished Valentine's Day, and of course it was a romantic time, and I know romance is in the air. And of course you are a USA Today best-selling author, and mm-hmm. Let's talk about this newest series of yours, and the new book, Lady Bridget's Diary.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and I'm so excited to chat with you about this book. I loved writing it, and I'm so excited for everyone to finally read it.
Well, you feel that joy in your, you know, I love to use the word joy on paper, because one really, when you read this book, really feels the joy that you had in writing this. It's such a fun book. I had to smile as I was reading. I was thinking, oh, she's loving this. I mean, this is just you don't want to stop. You want to keep. You really captured, of course, the period so beautifully too. So tell us a little bit about who is Lady Bridget?
Okay. Well, Lady Bridget is the heroine of the book, which is, to no surprise, a Regency English version of Bridget Jones's Diary, that very popular novel from a few years ago. And that is a version of Pride and Prejudice, the classic romance novel. So I kind of matched those two up in a more, in my version, which is Lady Bridget's Diary, and my heroine is an American, actually, who her family has recently inherited a title, and so they've gone to England, and she's a total fish out of water and trying to fit in and documenting her failures in her diary. And, you know, she meets Lord Darcy, and anyone who's seen Pride and Prejudice or Bridget Jones's Diary knows what happens next.
And you just captured the period so beautifully. Have you lived in England? Did you study England? How did you manage to do that so beautifully?
Thank you. I have spent a lot of time in England as a student, and my husband is English, so we go to visit a lot.
He is the Lord Darcy of your life.
Yes. Right.
Now, do you find yourself calling him Lord Darcy in the dark?
I do not. Sorry.
No, you don't. Not quite that far.
You might get mad.
Well, so you come by your English credentials very nicely, because you know it's a wonderful. I love the Regency period. Mm-hmm. It's so fascinating, and your descriptions are wonderful.
Thank you. Thank you. And so much of it is, yes, it's my real life research and being there and feeling the place, and then. I'm a reader, too, so I read a ton of Regency romance as well. And I like to get in the mood and spirit that way.
Well, it's very clear. You know, a few months ago, I interviewed Eloisa James, who also, you know, specializes in English romantic periods, and she's great at capturing the era, and you've done a marvelous job too. It's just really great. It's so nice to sort of go back in time and to a different period and get away, and yet, you know, the Americans, it's so fun to have the American viewpoint of what English society was like.
Yes, one of my friends commented that the Regency romance is awesome because the heroes are never checking a cell phone.
Yeah. Oh, isn't that nice?
Better for escape.
So, yeah, of course, Lord Darcy. You've done Lord Darcy character so nicely, and you know, we all have this image of him, but you really captured, I think, the essence of sort of his surprise in dealing with an American. Like, oh wow, yes.
Yeah, it's so funny. I've never been the hugest Darcy fan myself, so writing his character was a great exercise in falling in love for me, because I had to find out what it was with him that was so alluring and lovable, even though he's kind of a jerk in the beginning. In fact, one of my editor's notes was, make him more of a jerk at first. But yeah, I love watching him and putting him in situations with Bridget, because he's just so flummoxed by her. And he's so reserved in English and repressed, and she's this bubbly, outgoing American. And I love the juxtaposition of their two characters.
And so now
really
this
fun to write.
This series is called Keeping Up with the Cavendishes.
Yes.
And so I imagine there's going to be quite a few more books coming out?
There will be three more books.
Three.
Four total. The family is three sisters and a brother who's the Duke. So each one of them will get their own full novel.
So it's fun to be able to do that, isn't it? To know in advance that you can do that too, that you have that that ability to carry the characters through for four novels. It gives you it gives you a sense of freedom that you can really go. You can, you know, keep building on it, on the excitement of it.
Exactly. And with this series, I wanted to make life really, really difficult for myself. So there's going to be a lot of overlap with the book. They're going to take place kind of concurrently instead of one after the other. So in Lady Bridget's diary, you remember where her sister goes missing for the day. That will be Lady Amelia's book. Will be, where was she that day? Who was she with?
Ah.
And that's the big start of her grand romance. So it was really fun to, exactly as you said, know I had this space to explore this family and all their dynamics and characters, and also to see how their stories intersect with each other and influence the decisions they make in their romances.
Oh yeah, it is. It is fun to know that you can do that and you have that freedom to do that. So it's. I know that everybody's going to be, once they read this first one, because as I said, Lady Bridget's diary is. It's just a fun read, and just such a nice change, you know, from, you know, you get tired of reading, you know, some of the modern fiction with the thrillers and the stockings and the, you know, murders and all of that. And so to read this is so refreshing and so, it's very charming in many ways, and just your writing is so good. And you, now, of course, you're a great proponent of romance writing, which I think really does serve a wonderful purpose. And I've been really thrilled to deal with quite a few romance authors. We had an event here in Tampa Bay area called the Beach Babes Book Blast. And I think it's something that perhaps you should come to, because it was a wonderful event. We had, I think, about 60 romance writers. from all over the
Oh, wow.
All over the country, and actually from other from Ireland, from Canada, and well, it was a blast. It was aptly named Beach
Babies.
I mean, it was really fun. It was such an a fantastic event, and to see all of the fans who came out. To meet the authors and to see them lined up there and so anxious to meet the authors. And it was, you know, it really, it touched my heart to see this, the enthusiasm of the readers.
There's a real special connection between romance readers and authors. And I think it's because romance authors are readers too. And we all just talk to each other with such love for this genre and these books. And it's such a fine line between reader and author in terms of, you know, accessibility on social media and talking to your favorites. But then also so many readers go on to become authors themselves. So it just creates these really nice, real relationships and friendships.
It's a beautiful dynamic. I think it's a wonderful dynamic of how the you know, you I was in... talking to the, you know, I went around to all the different tables and I talked to the people in line and I said, you know, why are you waiting so long? Because personally, I tend not to wait for anything. You know, I like, if I can't get to the head of the line, I'm not going to wait. But I mean, they were waiting a long time and they just said, you know, we get so many hours of pleasure from these books. That we just want to tell them, you know, thank you. Thank you for writing these and thank you for transporting us for a little while out of our sort of mundane, busy life. And there we have something to really put a smile on our face. And in your case, of course, I think like with Lady Bridget's Diary, it certainly will do that.
Awesome. That's what I was going for.
Well, you've got it. Now, do you have you done a lot of these readers events yet?
I've done a few, and we also have lots of conferences in romance in India. So I've been to those, and I love meeting people in the romance community. Everyone's always so nice and welcoming, and I made a lot of really great friends.
Well, and you wrote a book about romance novels, and it's called, I'll give it a plug, Dangerous Books for Girls, The Bad Reputation of Romance Novels. And, you know, that's an interesting book. What made you write that book?
Thanks. I noticed so much snark directed towards romance novels as a literary form and as people who read it and write it, and I wondered why that was, and so as I was a grad student in undergrad, I started researching it, and I was writing it, and just talking to so many authors and editors and people involved in the industry, and I kind of came to realize that, you know, this genre does a really important service to women in terms of telling their stories and empowering them to be writers and creators, and get, you know, a measure of independence and power from that. And so I wanted to write my big explanation of why these books are really valuable and why readers and authors shouldn't be made to feel ashamed of them. And they so often are.
Well, exactly. You know, some of the best writing I've read in the past few years has come from romance writers. Because, as I said, in your case, it's obvious you've done a lot of research. You know your period, and it really it's an education in many ways to read romance authors. You know, whatever period they're writing about, all of you do your research and really bring a lot of you know, interesting historical facts that most people don't even know about.
Exactly, and from the beginning, because we can trace the romance genre back to, you know, Jane Austen and Pride and Prejudice, and these books have served as education for women to learn about different places and time periods and people, and more, you know, for a while women didn't have access to education, so these books were especially valuable, and even now, you know, it's just fun to get swept away in a different world with different kind of people and to know about it and to feel a little bit smarter and happier when you're done.
Yeah, I think exactly. You don't feel as I said, you know, instead of reading books, which I really can't read too many of those books where, you know, there's somebody stalking a woman and there's somebody, you know, chasing a woman. And, you know, you don't learn anything from these books and you come away feeling blah, you know. But with your book, I mean, you really learn about, and you learn new words, and you learn about the period, you learn about the clothes, you learn about some of the historical characters of the period, and I think it broadens your knowledge.
It does, and I have a funny true story for you. When I was first dating my now husband, who's English, he tried to tell me he was a Viscount who inherited his title from his father as a Baron, and I was like, you have the order of precedence wrong. That's not how the titles are ranked. And he was like, it worked on all the English girls. And I was like, no, dude. Any American Regency romance reader will tell you, you know, the Viscount outranks the Baron, and these are the rules of inheritance. And that was something I just woke up one day after reading a dozen or so novels, just knowing. And I didn't realize learning it.
That is cute. Oh, that husband of yours is really a sneaky little dude. Yeah.
He is.
But the joy of listening, he keeps his British accent, right?
Yes, but I don't hear it anymore.
You don't hear
it? Not too much.
Because I lived in England for a long time, and in Sonning near Henley on Thames.
Okay.
And and I really enjoy hearing a British accent. So
it is charming.
It is charming. Now, as part of your encouragement, you know, to readers and to writers to get involved in the romance fiction, tell us a little bit about Lady Jane Salon.
Oh, sure. Lady Jane Salon is a reading series that started in New York City about, oh my gosh, 7 years ago? I was one of the co-founders along with the authors Hope Tarr and Leanna Renee Heber and our friend Ron Hogan, who's a book blogger. And we were out one night and talking about reading series and thought, why isn't there one for romance? And immediately went to, we should start one. And so we did. And they've been happening ever since. And now there's satellite salons all over the country, and it's amazing because we really just brought together romance fans and readers and authors once a month. Authors read from their books, and we've built this wonderful community around romance. You know, reading is such often a solitary activity, and this is a great way for readers to like come out and connect, and for authors to find new readers and share their story in a different way.
Well, I think it's wonderful that you do that, because I think exactly as I said that fans really enjoy this. This is it expands their horizons, and I think it's a wonderful thing that you writers are sharing this this love for your work with your fans. It's beautiful.
Now, thanks. And yeah. It is a big love fest.
It is, and it's wonderful. Now, you have a very nice website. You have on your website all of your books, and do you enjoy blogging?
I do enjoy blogging. As you might imagine, novel writing does not provide much immediate feedback. So Lady Bridget's Diary is out today, and I probably finished it 6 to 9 months ago.
Uh-huh.
So blogging is a great way for me to write faster and get more feedback from readers, and another way to connect with them. And I like to blog about books I love and share recommendations or ideas that I have about the genre. Today I have a blog of what really goes on in an author's life on publication day.
Oh, that's exciting. So that'd be fun to read. Now, let's tell everybody about your website. Spell it out for people.
Yes, it is mayarodale.com. So that's M-A-Y-A-R-O-D-A-L-E.
And It's a very nice website. It's very easy to read, and there's lots of really great stuff to read on it. I like that when a web page has a lot of value. And as you said, you have this article today, An Author's Life, on Publication Day, on Pub Day, and it's an exciting day for you. And
thank you.
I'm just so happy that I was able to talk to you, and I'm going to encourage all of the everyone to go to, you know, buy your book. I know you can get it on Amazon and every place, and
thank you.
And get out it's there. Also, where else?
Oh, it's also available in Target and Walmart and Barnes & Noble, iBooks, everywhere.
Okay, that's wonderful. Yeah, go out and get this book today, because it's a wonder. It's just a nice book to just. Well, of course, we're here in Florida, and we have a lot of, you know, snowbirds, people from up north who have come down here for the winter.
That's
and so
wonderful.
I'm going to tell all of them to go out, run over to Target. It's really close and nearby here to the beach, and take this book out to the beach and or sit out by the pool. And it's a wonderful read. It's fun. It takes your mind into a new place, and especially in this time of when there's too much politics and too much going on in the world, it is just so wonderful to sit down with your book. And actually, I did that. I took it out to the balcony. I was reading, and I forgot everything. I just said, I'm in another world here, and this is just, it was just so pleasant. So,
that's what I'm trying to do.
And perhaps with a cup of tea, and
perfect.
Which is perfect. And just to enjoy this wonderful book. It's by Maya Rodel. Okay, everybody get out there and get Lady Bridget's Diary and enjoy yourself. And I want to thank you so much, Maya, for coming on. And I want to make sure that when your next book comes out, and I looked at the cover just now, they were just on your webpage, and it's, well, the Lady Bridget's cover is very nice. They did a really great job.
Thank you.
And then the next one is going to be Chasing Lady Amelia.
So, yes, and that will come out this summer.
Okay, so then perhaps you'd come back on the program this summer, and we can talk about it some more and talk about, give some hints on how you did the research, because a lot of the, you know, people who listen to my program are romance writers, and any hints you can give them on how to do research. So let's plan on that. You're going to come back this summer, and we'll talk specifically about doing research and about Chasing Lady Amelia. Okay?
Perfect.
Great.
It's a date. Thank you so much for having me today.
Okay. Thank you for being on. Have a great day.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Bye-bye.
You too. Bye.
This is the TAN Talk Radio Network.
Are you a writer? Do you have a great idea for a movie? Want to know how to get started? Then join the Actors, Screenwriters, and Crew Production Group. They meet every month in Clearwater to talk about how to construct a winning script, get your script read by the group, or just join in the fun. Contact Barbara Harrington, the best-selling author of Give Him Back to God, for time and location. She brings her experience as a screenwriter and casting director in such hit films as Cocoon and Absence of Malice to this lively group of film enthusiasts. So call Barbara, 727-572-6345, or email her at bharrington2@tampabay.rr.com. Get inspired, and one day you may hear those magic words, lights, camera, action. Call Barbara for details at 727-572-6345.
Hi, I'm John Rakowski with Charles Ruttenberg Realty. Don't you love living here in the Tampa Bay area? Oh, I'm sorry, you don't live here yet? Well, if you already are or thinking about it, call me at my office at 727-538-9200 extension 2 for any real estate needs, including a free market analysis of your home. Your home is worth more than you can imagine. Call me today at 727-538-9200 extension 2. I'm John Rakowski.
Looking for a good book? Whether you want the latest bestseller or a rare book, Haslam's Bookstore at 2025 Central Avenue in downtown St. Petersburg is the place to visit. Haslam's has been in business for over 70 years and is the largest new and used bookstore in Florida. With 30,000 square feet and over 300,000 books, you'll find just the right book for you. Bestsellers, cookbooks, military, history, and so much more. Check out their website, www.haslams.com, to find out about their special events. Remember, Haslam's, one of Florida's true treasures, 2025 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg, and they're open on Sundays from noon to 5.
This is the Tan Talk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I'm back with my next guest, Stephen Harrigan, whose book, A Friend of Mr. Lincoln, was just released. Hi, Stephen, are you there?
Yeah, good morning, Patsy. How are you?
Fine, thank you. Thank you for joining me today.
Sure,
you know,
thanks for having me. Sorry.
Oh, your book did something to me that I haven't experienced for a long time. I started reading it, and within a paragraph or two, tears started running down my eyes. It was so moving. Your first few pages are so moving. I won't give it away. I won't tell people why. But just because once you read the first two pages of your book, nobody would want to put that book down. It's a grabber, I can tell you. You know, they always say make sure your first few pages are really grab the attention of the reader. Well, you managed to do that because the tears are pouring down my eyes, and I think, oh my goodness, oh, you captured this so beautifully.
Oh, it's so great to hear you say that.
So let's talk about this book, A Friend of Mr. Lincoln. And it's, of course, what you've done is created a fictional character who is a friend of Abraham Lincoln and brought us back in time and to this period when they were friends. This is before Lincoln, of course, was the president. So tell us a little bit about how you came out with the idea and some of the work that you've really made it, sort of you've woven the story together just beautifully.
Oh, thank you. Well, the idea came to me as my wife and I were driving cross country. We live in Austin, Texas, and one summer we were driving to Massachusetts, and we were listening to Team of Rivals by Doris Kearns Goodwin, you know, the great book about Lincoln's cabinet and his presidency. And there was a little bit about Lincoln's early life that intrigued me, particularly how clumsy and confused he was around women. And we were listening to this on an Audible book, and we just decided to make a detour to Springfield, Illinois, where Lincoln had lived, you know, for much of his life before he went off to the presidency. And it was just such an evocative place. And, I don't know if you've ever been to Springfield, but it's very much, you can still feel the footprint of what that city was like back in the 1830s and 1840s. And, you know, there's a real vibe there of Lincoln as a real human being, not just an icon, but as a, you know, normal, flawed, regular person like us. And I just got intrigued by thinking about what would it have been like to have known him in this period of his life before he was such a big deal, before he was a kind of historical saint. And the more I thought about it, the more I read about him, the more I just couldn't stop myself.
Well, you have really, well, not just captured the time, but and captured sort of the essence of the man, the way you've woven in the story. Of course, you know, we're talking about the friend that you created, Cage Weatherby.
Uh-huh.
It was hard for me to, after a while, I forgot that he was fictional, uh-huh, which is, of course, a great compliment to you because he was there as far as, you know, he really brought out the story. So,
well, that was my hope, was that I could create a fictional character who would be credible enough and feel alive enough so that when you read the book, you'd feel like you knew Lincoln, that you were there by his side. And, you know, I thought about using historical characters for that same purpose. You know, there are people who knew Lincoln very well, of course, but they weren't everywhere I needed them to be. So I just decided to extract a couple people from the historical record and plug in my character where I needed him. And so it gave me a degree of intimacy that I really needed as a novelist, and I thought a reader might appreciate.
Well, I think so. I think exactly. It's, what happens is some of the books about Lincoln, there are so many, to put it mildly, they're downright boring. You know, they just don't capture it. They talk about what happened. They talk about things. But here, Cage is deeply involved with each of these important moments in Lincoln's life and early life, and of course with Mary Todd Lincoln and his opinions of her. And so, you know, it really comes alive. And I think anyone who, you know, wants to know more about Lincoln would do very well, you know, to start with this book if they haven't already read a lot of books, because sometimes they might start a heavier book, which, you know, this is not a heavy book in the sense like Doris Kearns Goodwin does. But sometimes that's too much for the average reader, for the, you know, person who just wants to have a pleasant reading experience. And I think you've done, as I said, whenever a book on the first few pages can connect so emotionally with a reader, that's important.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I think that's the job of historical fiction. It's how I learned about history. I mean, it's how I got involved in history, as a kind of passion, was just reading historical fiction in high school and feeling that I was there in a way that I couldn't quite get from, you know, a history book. I love history. I love reading, you know, factual history, but there's something that's so, you know, deeply intimate and animating about a novel, a historical novel, that really takes you there and puts you in the scene.
Exactly. Now, how long did it take you to do this research? And you had done previous books. You did the Alamo book. What's the name of it?
Yes, The Gates of the Alamo.
Yeah.
That came out in 2000.
Yeah.
And that takes place, it's another novel, it's another historical novel, and takes place roughly around the same time in the 1830s. So I had a head start on the research. But that one took me a lot longer to research because I was starting from ground zero. But this one took about four and a half years to write. And a lot of that time was, of course, spent reading about Lincoln, reading about Springfield, you know, boning up on all sorts of, you know, strange things like what people were eating, what they were wearing, what kind of furniture they would have in their houses, you know, trying to set the stage and understand that world completely enough so that I, you know, that when I set a scene in somebody's house, I could visualize it. I could understand, you know, without having to pore over a book anymore, exactly what that place looked like and how people were acting with each other and speaking and that kind of thing.
Yeah, it became second nature with you because,
right, yeah.
Because it, as I said, there's that seamless nature of how you're writing and you bring it all together. What was the most remarkable thing that you discovered about the period that you hadn't known before?
Well, it's hard to say about the period. I probably how interconnected everything was. Yeah, there's a scene in the book that you might remember where they get the news in Springfield, Illinois, that the Alamo has fallen and Davy Crockett has been killed. Or there's a scene later in the book that involves the Donner Party, which left from Springfield in 1846. So
Yeah, I had never connected that until I read the book. It was never sort of it was perhaps in the back of my mind, but I enjoyed these connections of finding out how they reacted to different events.
Yeah, that was fun for me too to discover that, you know, Abraham Lincoln didn't exist in isolation. Springfield didn't exist in isolation. There was a thriving newspaper culture. News was spreading slowly, but compared to our time, but intensely. And so everybody was aware and concerned of everything else. Everybody, you know, the election of say 1840 was every bit as riveting to people as the election we're having is today. And so the most unexpected thing for me was just how alive this world was. And, you know, once you sort of blow the dust off of it as a novelist and start inhabiting it, you feel, oh, man, I know this place. I've been here. I know these people. And that was very exciting to me.
Well, you know, talking about politics, it hasn't changed much.
It's getting weirder, I think.
Well, yeah, a little perhaps weirder, but it was a rough and tumble time back then too. It was not, it was not all pure.
yeah, and people, you know, it was, you know, the same kinds of people were doing the same kinds of things. So, if you're a politician in 1838, you're roughly the same as a politician in 2016, the same kind of personality and with the same ambition and the same, you know, motives and some of the same strategy. So it felt, like I say, it felt familiar. And what was most familiar to me is just how ambitious everybody was and how desperate to get ahead. It was like a frontier community, Springfield was, and everybody wanted to put that place on the map and put themselves on the map. So it was a hive of activity and really exciting to have been there. For Mary Todd, for instance, who came from Lexington, Kentucky, this must have seemed like a really happening place.
Speaking of Mary Todd, she plays an important part in the story.
Sure. Yeah, she's a fascinating character, and the more I learned about her, and the more I tried to imagine how she would behave in certain situations, the more interesting she got. She's seen by history as a kind of crazy woman, basically. I mean, but you know, here in this part of the story, she was of Lincoln's story. She was young and vivacious, and incredibly smart and educated and ambitious. So she really belonged in this place. And, you know, I keep thinking, what if Mary Todd had been able to vote? What if she had been able to run for office? History might have turned out differently. She might not have been the woman who ended up being institutionalized by her son, you know, because she was so...
Well,
crazy.
That's right. She could have been. Can you imagine her running for president?
Well, I can.
You can, exactly. I mean, it would have been fun. Well,
yeah, right,
almost
uh-huh.
as well, even perhaps more fun than today because
right, uh-huh.
she was.
She would make the race interesting. For
sure. She would have. Can you imagine? Oh, if things had turned out differently and Lincoln had to follow her around and give speeches for her, that would have been, I think we need one of those time machines. I'm going to be talking to a writer later today, and he has one of those time machines created by Tesla, and he can go back and forth in time. We could go back and change history, and that would be very, very amusing.
Absolutely, yeah.
So, you know, when... So this took you a long time, 4.5 years, and it's I think it's turned out just beautifully.
Thanks.
And I have a feeling that now, of course, you are you write you're a screenwriter, mm-hmm. and you've done some really great work in the past. And I have a feeling if somebody comes along and asks you to turn this into a script, you'll be able to turn this into a script.
Well, it could be it. Yeah, it could be an interesting movie. Of course, there's or a TV series, more likely.
Yeah, TV series.
Yeah.
Well,
I think Daniel Day-Lewis owns this territory so much right now.
Well, you know, but you have a different take on it. I think it's you bring out a different style, which I really think adds a depth to Lincoln that I think is missing from the other ones. And there was a recent Lincoln TV thing that I thought sort of really missed his personality.
Mm-hmm.
And so if he's anything like it, what you've written about, I think your book would make a fantastic little mini series.
Well, yeah, I'll explore that if anybody turns out to be interested.
Well,
I think it'd be fascinating to see him on the screen at this point of his life, I think, because he was not the Lincoln we know yet. He was not the Lincoln he wanted to be yet. He was confused and complicated, I think.
And what particular characteristics of at that time do you think showed that he was going to become the great Abraham Lincoln?
There were several. I mean, he was a commanding presence. He was, he could really work a room. People paid attention to him. People liked him. People trusted him for the most part. And he was, even though I think his speech making and his writing evolved, he had a brilliant presence on the stump. I mean, he could really hold an audience spellbound. And I think, most important, he was principled. He had a core sense of honor and decency that he sometimes violated. And if you've read the book, you know that when he thought he violated those precepts that he had set for himself, he fell apart and sunk into, literally suicidal depression. But there was a moral center to him that he couldn't always grasp, but he knew was there, and it was a compass that he followed. So there is there's a direct line from the Lincoln of this book to the Lincoln that we know as the 16th president. But I think there are also some surprises about this version of Lincoln, or about this early iteration of Lincoln, that we might not expect. If we only knew him as president, we might not know that he had almost been in a duel. We might not know that he'd been in the Black Hawk War, or that he'd once made a political opponent cry because he was so ruthless in his mockery of him. There was a little streak of...
Well, tell us a little bit about that one.
Well, there was a guy named Jesse Thomas that he was running against for the state legislature, and Thomas basically started a debate before he should have, and Thomas started in on Lincoln, and when it was Lincoln's turn to speak after he got there, he was just so merciless in making fun of this guy that he broke down in sobs. It went down in history as the skinning of Thomas. That's what it's called in the history books. And Lincoln was appalled at his own behavior and apologized to Thomas. But it was one of those moments where he overreached. He knew he wasn't his best self, and it was devastating to him. And there were other times when he was writing, scandalous anonymous letters against political opponents in the newspaper, and several times that backfired on him as well. So, like I say, he would fit very well into the political climate today. I keep thinking if Abraham Lincoln had a Twitter account, he would get into bad trouble all the time.
That is a fun thought. Wow. You should do that. You should open a Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah, there you go.
And comment on the current events.
Right.
Yes, in his voice. That would be very amusing.
Definitely.
Oh, wow. But it might get you in trouble. Because one could get really carried away. So that's why it's really nice, I think, for people to pick up your book and to go back in time and enjoy it. And I think, as I said, you created, I think, one of the best fictional historical characters. because, again, you didn't, he's not sugar-coated, or he's not, you know, a simple character. You turned Cage Weatherby into such a believable character.
Oh, great. I'm glad you thought so, because that was the challenge of the book for me, was to try to make this made-up guy as able to stand with Lincoln. I'm able to be as interesting as Lincoln to the reader, and that was really the work of the novel for me. Is
yeah,
to try to
because that is it is probably one of the most difficult things to do with a historical novel, because people often try to do that, but then their character really is almost like an alien. You feel that they've just been put there for a purpose.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And to observe and to make the comments. Whereas with you, Cage, which also was a perfect selection of name, because it just fits in with the period. He's so real. As I said at the end, I almost forgot he wasn't real.
Right. I did too. I mean, you know, I made the guy up, and I have to keep reminding myself he never existed, because it, you know, when you're writing a book, the characters become so incredibly real to you, and you live with them every day. And so I'm carrying around, you know, my fictional version of Lincoln and my fictional version of Cage all day long.
Yeah. Well, you did a great job, and I really want to recommend this to everybody, that, you know, it's called A Friend of Mr. Lincoln, and it's by Stephen Harrigan. And do you have a website you want people to go to?
Yeah, it's StephenHarrigan.com, StephenHarrigan.
And the book is available on all the major book places, and in stores probably, in Barnes & Noble. And it's a great read. And as I said, it transports you back in time and gives you a new understanding of Lincoln, and a depth of understanding that I think it's very valuable. You know, people, we can't forget Lincoln. We can't forget what he did. And it's nice to put that human face on him. And you've done that. Now, what are you working on now?
I am writing. I've switched gears from historical fiction to actual history. And I'm writing The History of Texas.
Oh, wow.
Which is a big story.
Yeah, like, how long is that going to take you?
I don't even want to think about it.
Yeah.
But I'm well into it, and I'm having a lot of fun.
Of course, The Gates of the Alamo, which was really, is another fantastic book. You did a lot of research for that, too.
Right, yeah. So I know that. I know at least one period of Texas history I can kind of skate through, but there's a lot of history in Texas. But,
well, I lived in Houston. We lived in Houston for a long time, and both of my boys were born in Houston.
Oh, okay.
And so we know Texas very well, and I can't even imagine doing a history of Texas, because that's going to take you until you're about 95 years old.
let's hope not, but let's hope for my publisher's sake.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's it. Unless they keep giving you advances for the next 30 years or so.
Right.
So, it's something that we're going to look forward to. And I'm sure as you're going through the history of Texas, you'll find a lot of other characters that you're going to want to write a historical fiction about.
Oh, that keeps happening to me over and over again. I've 10 historical novels I've already figured out I'd love to write just from doing the research on Texas. So it's crazy, but I've got to focus on the history part right now.
Well, it was great talking to you, and I want you back on when you have this book on Texas, so you can't be too many years into this thing. Okay.
I'll definitely speed up for your benefit, Pat.
Okay, that's a good idea. Okay, so again, it was great to talk to you, Stephen Harrigan, and the book is A Friend of Mr. Lincoln, and it's a wonderful book. So, Stephen, thank you so much. I really enjoyed talking to you. Take care and keep writing.
Okay, thanks, Patsy.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Okay. Bye now. Oh, that's fun. Fantastic. I really enjoy this book. As I said, when you get a book, and they always say, you know, when you're trying to get an agent, you have to make sure that your book is in perfect shape. But you have to make sure that the first three pages are really in perfect shape and really capture you. And this is one of those books. It is really a fantastic book. And I know that if if you once you start it, you can't really stop reading it because you want to know what's happening. And I just can't recommend it highly enough. It's a good read, and that's what you're always looking for when you're looking for a good book. Now, again, I want to remind everyone that Irene Goodman's auction is coming up, and it's a auction for charity, and she does a critique. If you don't remember who Irene Goodman is, she is just like the top literary agent, and I was so happy that last week I had one of her clients on, Suzanne Redfern, and Suzanne Redfern is exactly the same thing as what I was just talking about in Stephen Harrigan. It was the first two pages. When I read the first two pages of Suzanne's book, I said, that's it. It's a good book. No, it's called No Ordinary Life. And if you haven't gotten it yet, it is available at Target. It just came out 2 weeks ago. And again, it is a book where you read the first two pages and you want to know the rest of the story. So as writers, think about it. Think about that first two or three pages. Are they so strong that the reader just wants to keep going, doesn't want to give it up, and wants to just know what's going to happen next? So if you are ready to show your book to Irene Goodman, go to her website, IreneGoodman.com, or go to my website, radio-joyonpaper.com, and I have a link there. And Irene will give you a critique if you win her auction. And it's the auction starts on March 1st. So, you know, check it out and save up your money. It's worth it because to get a critique from somebody like Irene is amazing. Now, meanwhile, of course, I'm going to have on Thursday somebody truly remarkable, Margaret George, who wrote Elizabeth I, Elizabeth I, and it is just a fantastic book. Margaret George is a writer that goes beyond the ordinary. She is extraordinary. She is not just it's hard to explain. She's such a great writer. Of course, for somebody who loves history, Margaret is the one that you have to read. So make sure you tune in on Thursday for that. And I will really have a fantastic hour with her because I'm just so thrilled to talk to her. Then on March 1st, I have Jane Friedman. Jane Friedman is the person to go to, the go-to person when you're interested in writing query letters. She knows everything about it. And so make sure you tune in on March 1st for that because that is going to be a wonderful show. And I'm going to go really in-depth with her on how to write a great query letter and how to get out there and find an agent. So I just want to remind everyone again, Miami Avenue Wine Bar is on Gulf Boulevard, and you should visit it. Meanwhile, this is Patsy with a Z saying come back on Thursday. And remember, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken on stage or screen. So join me on Thursday. Meanwhile, remember, don't let anyone steal your joy. Treasure it and share it and have a great week. Well, have a great 2 days until I see you on Thursday. Bye.